In this morning's second reading, Barbara Rode wrote that we each catch glimpses of who we are by looking at our past and by recognizing the ideas that move us. While she speaks of Unitarian Universalism, I believe that the ideas that move us, that encourage us, that prod us to act, are part of our own past, part of our own personal history, part of our story. We express those ideas daily in words and particularly in our actions. Our actions reveal the words that we really live by. Where did the words "you live by" come from? Nancy Schaefer says she has been looking for first words, words that came before words. My home church minister, Reverend Pollock, noted in a newsletter that we need words to say what we see, hear, feel, and believe. The words you live by express your beliefs, the basic principles that you follow at work, at home, and they express your values. Some words you live by reflect your philosophy, also your spirituality, and often your theology, although sometimes unexpressed. Some words you live by define your happiness, define your grief and grievances, hope, and the meaning in your life. Likely there are words you once lived by in childhood, but they were challenged and changed as you went to school, and some of you today, currently, are processing something that challenges the words you live by. What are they? Allow me to ask you a few questions. What are the words, the proverbs, the philosophies by which you live? Where did they come from? Which ones have evolved and changed over time, showing your personal growth from childhood to a mature adult gaining wisdom? Most of us believe in that personal growth. However, equally possible is that the evolution of your ideas might indicate a loss of idealism, a loss of hope or meaning. Certainly, we come to times when we have doubts and uncertainty. There is a deepening sadness because as we age, we face our mortality. Thus, we adjust, we search again to find different words, adjusted words, by which to live. What are they? Have they changed from your school days? The words we live by reflect what we believe to be true, and we trust our truths. What were the origins of the words you live by initially? Certainly from your parents, who received certain beliefs and maxims, mundane or profound, from their parents and from their parents. For example, did you grow up with the words, a penny saved is a penny earned, as I did? My grandparents went through the Great Depression. They believed waste not, want not. Perhaps these principles are part of yours, too. Lived by grandparents and great-grandparents and great-grandparents from the old country. You have your own remembrance of words that you lived by and trusted because you trusted the sources. And as a child, you trust your parents. They are your sources. They are the authority. Our parents are our first teachers to give us a code of behavior, principles by which we act. For example, when the relatives come for Thanksgiving, there are certain rules. We live by those words, which are the rules of living with our parents and our family. Sometimes we have to suffer the consequences. We can't eat at the Thanksgiving table. We have to sit with the children. Often their rules and their patterns, good or bad, become ours. They become our values and philosophy of life because sometimes we don't know any better. And it's the beginning place where we begin our own philosophy and our own beliefs about living, education, our work ethic, and our religious beliefs. I think that what we learned from our parents, who learned from their parents and so forth, are codes of behavior, beliefs, words we live by, ingrained in us as strongly as our inherited genes. Think for a minute what words were ingrained in the Sarnoff brothers of the Boston Marathon recently. Think for a minute what words are ingrained in children when they are victims of domestic violence. We grow up and understand life based on the principles taught and modeled overtly, unconsciously, by other significant people in our lives. Perhaps you had a favorite uncle. And we can't omit our culture. Our culture teaches a lot of what to believe in. We find some words specifically meaningful to us, and we take them with us as we grow and as we learn. Now, in the realm of mundane and proverbial words from parents, my mother often had this saying to the four of us, "If you take the shortcut, it will turn out to be the long cut." Well, I didn't realize I was testing that one day. I was late for school. I was in, sixth grade. I hated when you got to school and the door was closed to the classroom. So I decided I would take a shortcut, which people, older kids, said that you could get to school really fast, okay? It meant going through somebody's yard. Well, I did. I followed the path way past their yard. Well, I ended up in mud and brambles, and I had to turn around, and I was really late. The shortcut was the long cut. A version of that appears in Icelandic proverbs. You will reach your destination even though you travel slowly. At elementary school and catechism classes, I learned the golden rule. In Matt chapter 7, the Sermon on the Mount, you will read that do the words of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. I learned that it is a pretty universal rule. A Buddhist version is hurt not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. A Nigerian proverb is, one who is going to take a pointed stick to pinch a baby bird, first try it on himself to see how it feels. Another version that involves listening skills. Treat others as they wish to be treated, not how you think they wish to be treated. In philosophy class, it's called the ethic of reciprocity. The ethic of reciprocity is an important tool for getting along with people because it shows that we have empathy for the other person. It is not a rule for tit for tat. It is not an eye for an eye. Words which some live by. I don't know whether you learned the golden rule in grade school or in religious education, or whether it is even specifically taught these days, but it does provide an important maxim by which to live, whether you are in school, in marriage, at work, or retired, or in a nursing home. I always liked what UU Minister Robert Fulghum wrote back in 1988. He wrote these principles based on the golden rule, he says so, in a book called All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. You remember that? I like them. I'm not going to read them all because it's hot. That's not his rule. He says, share everything. Don't hit people. Clean up your own mess. How many times have you said that to your children? Wash your hands before you eat. Don't take things that aren't yours. Warm cookies and cold milk are good for you. Here's one I don't follow but would like to. Take a nap every afternoon. Sure. Goldfish and hamsters and white mice and even the little seed in the styrofoam cup, they all die. and so do we. And remember Dick and Jane books and the first word you learned, the biggest word of all, look. That was in 1988. Let's go back further into the second century. You may have read somewhere along the way some of Marcus Aurelius's sayings, and he has a little booklet. There is a little book that somebody compiled of his sayings, and he attributes everything he's learned to parents, to mentors, and to some scholars that he has read and gotten to know. You can pick up this book anywhere and read something, sometimes silly, sometimes dated, but sometimes pretty real. He says, take it that you have died today and your life story is ended. Therefore, regard what further time you may be given as an uncoveted surplus and live it out in harmony and nature. He also says, dig within. There lies the wellspring of good. Ever dig and it will ever flow. This is a delightful book, written back in the second century. In churches, synagogues, and temples of our parents, many of us found words in Scripture to live by. The biblical book of Proverbs, which was reportedly written before the Common Era of the 6th century, is a compilation of wisdom garnered through experience. But most of it is about the fear of God. So many of those Proverbs, though, are interesting to read. Some of them are relevant today, and it is why that book is called one of the wisdom books. In college, many of us discovered a treasure trove of philosophers and writers who provided words to live by. You may have read Tolstoy, Aristotle, possibly Emerson, Sartre, Benjamin Franklin, Gandhi, and of course Theodore Parker, and Eleanor Roosevelt. I sense many of today's youth find the words that they live by in music lyrics. When I was in college, I found Bob Dylan's lyrics and words somewhat relevant to the times. Those words from philosophers and other significant people, excuse me, were not our own words, but were read and discussed with our teachers. But they were always on a level of non-experience. They were discussions. They were what sounded right and what felt good as we read them. But then you graduated from school and you went to college, you went to work and you went and got married. And sometimes those words went by the wayside. Words and beliefs are not static entities, although in some cultures they are. For us, they become tested in the classroom of life. Words from parents, teachers, mentors, supervisors, ministers present a challenge in our rebellious teen years as we struggle to leave the nest. And we're supposed to leave the nest. We're supposed to find lives of our own. Oh, excuse me. Just excuse me 1 minute. As we grew and developed from college, we sought to find our own way through life. The workplace surely presents a great challenge, and we began to question the old authorities. Have you ever had to speak up at work for something that you didn't find was going right? Were you called, or were you thought of, or were you worried that you might be called a whistleblower? When whistleblowers are true, they are like the messenger God. Don't kill the messenger. Often you lose your job. Often many others lose their job right along with you. Maybe our teachers and parents didn't get everything all right. Maybe you learned at school or work that life is not fair. You learned he who or she who has the gold makes the rules. So here we are today, surrounded by banks that no longer pay interest to small savings accounts where my grandchildren would like to save. My kids saved. They bought their first cars with their savings. I asked what happened to a penny saved is a penny earned. We learn when idealism and expectations go awry. I'm getting over a summer cold with allergies. We discover through pragmatic experience and interaction with other people that the words we live by are not inert. We are relational human beings, after all, and our interactions are quite complex. They don't follow the golden rule. The full complexity of our life intrudes on our comfortable precepts. Suffering and pain intrudes on our two-dimensional beliefs. Our emotions and feelings are also intrude. In pain, often the words we live by come under stress, and we question, or we become silent, withdrawn, or feeling somewhat betrayed by those words we had lived by. When we begin to think, to reason, we develop our own truths. Plato said somewhere, thought begins with recognizing that something is out of place. When something is awry, you begin to question. Facing us is a lifelong process of adjusting and questioning and challenging our own words and discovering that certain authority figures did not have all the answers. We might have noticed in the process that perhaps in first best teacher, after all, was our own hearts. Please note that this kind of questioning of authority or questioning of our own self-authority is not acceptable in all cultures, nor in all religious traditions. Thank you. Thank you very much. In some cultures, questioning authority brings out the big guns. If we are open to learning about ourselves, we need to integrate new ideas, adjust, change, and grow wise in the process. As we age, the words we live by one become challenged simply by living life, unless we prefer to be stuck and stubborn, which leads to another kind of pain. There are timeless truths, perhaps, that we don't question, those of integrity and honesty. Our UU principles seem to be timeless truths that withstand the tests of time. Do you act on your beliefs habitually or with careful thought, deliberation, and reflection? Do you allow yourself to change? There's nothing harder. What helps you work through significant changes in your life? What I propose today is that you all take a look, as I have often still do, at our presuppositions, our background beliefs, those that we have unconsciously adopted. You can explore your beliefs, values, and philosophy before pain forces modifications. By selecting an ordinary experience or issue you have at work, you can reflect with some deliberation to unravel what it means to you. For me, a social justice issue that I think about often is trying to understand poverty. In the Gospel of Mark, chapter 14, is the statement that I'm sure you all have heard, "The poor you will always have with you." Are those words a self-fulfilling prophecy? I don't like them at all. And sometimes I wonder whether those words were translated from the Aramaic incorrectly, as some words from the Lord's Prayer have been. Are those words quoted out of context to justify inaction on poverty? Are those words ones that you live by to justify poverty? Probably not. In times of witnessing another person's grief, do you believe the person should just get over it? Probably not. To have no words to follow is to be committed to nothing in particular. To have unexamined words is to remain simplistic or stuck or making sweeping generalizations. To live by words that are convenient to you at the moment, expedient to you at the moment, may indicate a lack of steadfastness to the words that are meaningful to you, to those principles and values. To lose sight of the important values represents an irresponsibility and deep loss of selfhood and spirituality. And this loss affects us and endangers democracy. Barbara Rode wrote in the last sentence that we are passionate about our search for truth. And yes, as individuals, most of us care for that search for truth, and it becomes a lifelong pursuit. It involves self-reflection and search. The search provides long-time, ongoing spiritual growth. Adrienne Rich wrote, "No one said we had to study our lives, but we do. It does matter that we study our lives, to search for the truth about ourselves through the words we actually live by, provides long-term, long-time spiritual growth and some sort of wealth, the wealth of courage and strength and fortitude to question your own authority." Someone said, "Examining one's beliefs is no picnic." It's not, if you're going to be truthful to yourself. It is rewarding and meaningful to understand oneself more deeply. To close, here's some words from Buddhism. "Be ye lamps unto yourselves. Hold to the truth within yourselves as to the only lamp." Reflection helps us discern what we hold sacred, what we revere. Reflection helps us understand what we hold sacred and what we live by, those words.